Welcome to the Hey Boomer Podcast, the show that reminds listeners that we are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. Today, my guest was Dr. Jane Fleischman, a certified sex educator, and our conversation was both compelling and engaging. We spoke about sex in the second half of your life. We spoke about the physical changes we go through, elders, consensual sex in senior living facilities, and sex in the aging LGBTQ community. I know you're going to find this a fascinating conversation. My name is Wendy Green, and welcome to Hey Boomer. Hello, Hey Boomer listeners. I hope you all had a nice Valentine's and did something nice for yourself. So today's topic is sex in the second half of life. Did you see the TED Talk that I posted on our Facebook page that our guest, Dr. Jane Fleischman, gave? It's called, Is It Okay for Grandma to Still Have Sex? Something like that. Is it okay for grandma to have sex? So what do you think? Well, if you're a grandma like me, I'd say yes. But the topic actually goes deeper than that. Jane is raising the question of consensual intimacy in nursing homes, in assisted living facilities, and the respect that our seniors in those facilities need and deserve. So if you haven't had a chance to watch that video yet, I would encourage you to go to the Facebook page, watch that TED Talk after we finish our broadcast today. And also be sure to share this broadcast with your friends, anybody that you think would benefit from it, that would find it interesting. You can tag them in the chat with an ampersand in front of their name, and that will then notify them on both Facebook and LinkedIn that you think this is something that they should watch. So be sure and do that. And also let them know that the Hey Boomer show is available on most of the podcast channels. So if they couldn't listen live, they can certainly listen to the show while they're working out or taking a walk or cleaning their house or whatever it is that they do when they're listening to podcasts. Growing our audience is going to help us be more inspired, help us inspire more people, and help us bring in more guests. So be sure and share this out to your friends and colleagues. Before I bring Jane on, I also wanted to remind you of our new Hey Boomer partner, Lifeline Screening. So Lifeline Screening does preventative screenings for cardiovascular disease and stroke. And before I brought them on as a partner, I knew that I wanted to check it out myself. So I scheduled an appointment. I had all five screenings. I was very pleased with the professionalism of the organization, with the way it was all handled and the social distancing and all during COVID, with the results, the printed results that I got a couple of weeks later. And Lifeline Screening, as our partner, is offering a special rate for these five cardiovascular and stroke risk screenings to the Hey Boomer audience for $149. I did post the link in the comments. So if you're interested in getting some peace of mind, go ahead and check it out. And you can schedule your appointment right from that link. So let's see. I am ready to bring on Jane.
Hey.
Hi, Jane.
Wendy, hi. So nice to be with you.
It's so good to have you. And I love your outfit.
Oh, thank you. You're so kind. You know, during COVID, you don't have any coworkers to talk to about your outfit. Thanks for having me. I'm such a fan.
Oh, thank you, Jane. Well, let me do a brief introduction so people get to know your background a little bit.
Great.
So Dr. Jane Fleischman is a certified sexuality educator, an award-winning educator, writer, program developer, and sexuality researcher. She co-hosts a regular podcast on sex in the second half of life at ourbetterhalf.net. Let me show you that. Ourbetterhalf.net.
Great.
And as I said, also has the TED Talk, Is It Okay for Grandma to Have Sex? She holds a PhD and Master's of Ed in Human Sexuality from Widener University Center for Human Sexuality Studies. Her curious nature has led her to research sexual satisfaction in older adults. And her latest accomplishment, the Stonewall Generation, LGBTQ Elders on Sex, Activism and Aging, is a collection of contributions from a wide diversity of LGBTQ elders. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we go along. Jane is also the proud Jewish mother of two amazing 20-somethings. And she lives in Northampton, Massachusetts, where it's getting ready to sleet and then more snow. And you can also find Jane on her website at janefleischman.com.
Great.
Is there anything I left out, Jane?
No, I'm good. You don't even need me. Just, you know, everybody go, take a break, enjoy yourselves, and ask us questions later. No, just kidding.
And there you go. Okay, so tell me, why and how does somebody become a sex educator?
Yeah, I know. Why didn't I think of this earlier? This was my second career. Wendy, I had a very interesting career before this. For 30 years, I worked in the public sector as the, my last job was the director of medical education and staff development at a very large state psychiatric hospital in Connecticut. And when I turned 54 and a half, our governor was interested in giving us a little extra incentive to move us old people out. And I grabbed it. I was so psyched. So, and I loved my job. Don't get me wrong. I loved working in this psych facility. It was so interesting. It was like a big community, big campus, really interesting people, fantastic staff. We had, you know, 500 patients, 1,500 staff members, and I had my own great team. But when I retired, Wendy, at age 55, I never looked back. But I wasn't done. You know, I wasn't ready for shuffleboard. I wasn't ready to just, you know, kind of lose my generative capacity. And so I decided to go back to school. I had always wanted to challenge myself to see if I could do it. And I went back for a PhD. And I knew that I wanted to do something in a controversial area. I knew I liked taboo topics. I liked areas that nobody wanted to talk about. So sex was like the perfect topic. And it was a topic that, because I like to kind of, as John Lewis said, you know, be a kind of get into good trouble, or Bayard Rustin, you know, who was one of the architects of Martin Luther King's March on Washington in 1963, said we need more angelic troublemakers. And I thought, yeah, I'm not so angelic, but I'd like to make some more trouble. And what is one area that is fundamental to so many critical issues in our time is sex and sexuality. So I went back to Widener University, like you said, and I got my master's along the way and actually got my PhD. And Wendy, the funniest thing is, I got my PhD at age 62. So this was,
this
was not easy. I mean, when I was in school, like they said, at one point they said to me, you know, when was the last time you took biology? And I said, that was like 1971. And they said, okay, that doesn't count. So everything was new and everything was exciting and complicated and hard. But until the last minute, I was scared that I wasn't going to do it. You know what I mean? Like the night before graduation, I got a call from the president's office. And I thought, oh no, they found
the president of the university?
Yes. You know, the president of the university calling me. I thought, they found a typo on page 137. You know, it's not going through. We're sorry. We had to cancel the corsage, cancel the cap and gown. And all they really wanted was to make sure that my elderly parents could get their VIP parking because they were pretty disabled at that point. So I love that. You know what I mean? Like, that shows you how nervous I was right until the very end. And getting my PhD was a really high point in my life. And it was great for me because being a sexuality educator, now answering your question, sorry, that was a long-winded answer. The reason that I love that I chose this is because it fits. Because when I talk with particularly older adults and the staff who work with them in senior centers, or as you were suggesting, in assisted living or nursing homes, when I talk to older adults, they are so excited to have somebody talk to them about the realities of their lives, because so often older adult sexuality, and we can talk about this if you want more, gets kind of rendered invisible, as if it just doesn't exist, as if some period happens and magically we just stop being sexual beings. And of course we know that, I knew anecdotally that wasn't true, but now that I've become a sex researcher, I know that in terms of the research and the science behind it, that's absolutely not true. And so it was a great choice for me, and I wish I had done it earlier because I'm having so much fun.
Well, you know, everything happens when it's supposed to happen, right? So you may not have been ready earlier, and you were now ready to face the controversy and the fears.
Right.
One of the things I love about talking to you, Jane, is that sex can be a difficult subject to talk about, but you are so comfortable talking about it. It makes it much easier. As you know, I had some anxieties about the show leading up to it. So.
I think you did very, you're a good student, Wendy. I'm really proud of you. You've done very, I would give you a big check mark.
Thank you, Jane. So let's jump into some of the issues that we as older adults, and I would put us both in that category, face. And so some of us are still like back in the 60s and 70s, you know, when it was all about the act, right? First base, second base, third base, like we talked about. But there's the whole discussion about intimacy.
Yeah.
And so how do we kind of transition from it's the outcome or the act to it's the intimacy?
Yeah, so there's a real lot of confusion about sex and intimacy and relationships, and are they all the same? And, you know, yesterday was Valentine's Day. So a good example of love is romantic love. And most people think of Valentine's Day as kind of a pressure, like, oh, I got to get the right gift for my partner. I got to do the right thing for them. We should probably schedule a sex date because we haven't had enough in the past. And there's all these performance issues that happen around it. And I guess I want to kind of, like, first of all, give your listeners a moment to just breathe and say, it doesn't always have to be so pressured. And sex, intimacy, relationships aren't always the same. You could have tremendous love in your life for someone with whom you're never going to have sex with. I can think of family members. I can think of great friends that you would have tremendous affection for, but sex would not be part of that relationship. And I can think of people who have great sex in their lives without having the commensurate relationship with that, that they're having a great time with each other, but they really enjoy their singlehood and they enjoy living alone and they enjoy the freedom that they have to just enjoy themselves in the way that they like. But when they want to have sex, they have somebody that they can go have sex with. So I want to make sure that people who are listening really understand that we're in the generation, you know, those of us who consider ourselves baby boomers, we're the generation that kind of wrote the book on taking risks and being a little bit more adventuresome in many areas of our lives, including sex. And the sexual revolution occurred, as you said, in a time when we were often, you know, most of us were either just coming of age or figuring out who we were. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of adults who are now in their 50s, 60s, 70s, I think we have come to an understanding with our bodies that maybe we're having a really good time with someone, and that's all we want to do with them. And we don't want to get married again, or we don't want to start living with someone again. You know, for many people for whom their partner has passed away, or there's been a divorce and they're not quite sure how to start over again, they might be rethinking the old model, right? And so the old model may have been, you know, get started, have your first date, move in together, have your diamond ready to go. And maybe that's just not at all where you're at this point. And so I guess I'd like to really suggest that we rethink what sexuality is for older adults, what intimacy is for older adults, and really what relationships are, because we can have a lot more fun. You know, Lisa Diamond, who's one of my favorite sexuality researchers, wrote a book called Sexual Fluidity. I have it here on my shelf somewhere. But what she studied was this idea that what we think of as sexual orientation, or who you're, what gender you're attracted to, if you're a male and have always been attracted to females, or if you're female and you've always been attracted to males, may change over the course of a life. And so just that opening, like when Lisa Diamond wrote that, it kind of blew people's minds, like, oh, I see. I may not have to conform to that same script that I was going for many of my earlier years. In addition, the sexual script may have changed, because when you're older, maybe some of your parts aren't working the same way as they used to. And so you may not like the same sexual behaviors as you did when you were younger. And that means that you get an opportunity to rediscover your own body and think about what feels better for you now. And believe me, that journey that we're on, that what I call our sexual journey, one of my professors, Betsy Crane, wrote a whole book about this, that journey we're on, it never ends. And our sexuality is much bigger than that sexual behavior that we were interested in, or maybe even our identity, or maybe a relationship we were stuck in for many years. Now, boomers, this is your opportunity to kind of set a new direction for yourselves in this area of your life as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a really, the distinction you made about intimacy, I think that's super important, because we have intimacy with our friends, with our kids, with our,
right,
you know, family members in ways that are very meaningful and are different than we would have with a sexual partner.
True, true, true.
Hopefully we have an intimate relationship with our sexual partners too. But I wanted to, you brought up the idea that our bodies change and what we like changes. And if you've been, well, I guess the question can be either way. If you've been in a long-term relationship, the question is, how do you now broach that with your partner?
Right.
And the other side of it, if you're in a new relationship, how do you explain that to your partner?
Right, right. So when I think of it, in the area of social work, people talk about biopsychosocial, and I think that's a really good one. And I would add sexual as well. But in terms of our sexual changes as we get older, of course there are biological changes. Like, for instance, desire may wane, right? It just may. Particularly in long-term relationships, desire might be not as strong as it was. Physiology may change. Erections may not be as quick or as long-lasting as they were when people were younger. Vaginal dryness may change, when it used to be that there was enough lubrication, you know, for tons and tons of sexual experiences. Lately, some people might be feeling like, I don't have enough lubrication. And that's often because of the reduction of estrogen, and that the Skene's glands are not producing natural lubrication as much. And of course, for both of those examples, erections and vaginal dryness, there's lots of help out there. But people may get feeling really frustrated about that, and really anxious, and also in pain. And so that's why I think I like to think about it as bio and psycho and social, because our attitudes change, our kind of sense of who we are changes, as well as our physiology changes. And I think that it's not so important to focus on our physiology changing, but on how we feel about it. And I think about, as an example, people with chronic or long-term pain, that, you know, when you're living with pain, it's really exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
But you find ways that you can deal with it. And perhaps there's some medications, perhaps there's some exercise, perhaps there's some other attempts that you make to challenge that feeling so that you can really work through it. And that's what I'm talking about here, that we really work through some of our attitudes and bring some, what I think of as sex positive attitudes, to the physiological changes that may be occurring. One of my least favorite diagnoses in Western medicine is hyposexual desire disorder that has been a trigger for a lot of women. And, you know, sometimes people will come up to me at the end of my talks. I used to love this in person. It's so not available on Zoom. But in person, people would come up to me and they'd say, I want to see your vulva puppet, or I want to see your penis puppet. It's like, okay, sure. But then they start asking me questions, which is the best. And often somebody will say to me, I've been on antidepressants for years, and I just don't have any desire, and I don't get it. And why didn't anybody's shrink ever tell them that SSRIs or SNRIs are going to actually reduce your desire for sexual activity? Why didn't anybody say that? So that these people are feeling like there's something wrong with me. What's wrong inside of me? Well, there's nothing wrong. You're trying to take care of your mental health, and there may be a side effect on your sexual health. So what I really recommend is that we think through about these kind of changes that accompany us as we age, and really begin to give ourselves a little bit more permission to start thinking outside of the box. So speaking of outside of the box, oh, that was a terrible pun, Jane. I'm really sorry.
I know, terrible pun, Jane, but go ahead.
So for a lot of people, sexual intercourse, or PIV, penis and vagina intercourse, is the only equivalent to having sex. That's it. So I'm here to disabuse you of that. I'm here to tell you that there's many other ways of having sex, including what I call outer course. It's not really a word, excuse me, but it is a way of thinking about any form of satisfaction that doesn't include penetration. So use your mind, folks. Begin to wander. This is a good part of the moment of the program to just start thinking about what feels good. It could be a heavy makeout session. That could be amazing. And that could be exactly what you want right then. And it could be something completely different. So I really suggest that you really think, kind of, you know, rearrange the way you think about what sex means.
Yeah, because and that's so important. I mean, yes, our desire may, well, certainly it does, even without the antidepressants, with the drop in hormones. Desire changes.
Well, it can, and long-term relationships can be the death of desire, right? Esther Perel, who many P-E-R-E-L, many people have read her book about how domesticity ruins sexual activity. You know, so you have to really work hard. And what I suggest to people is really beginning to take your sensuality and your sexuality for a new journey, right? And to think about it in a different way. And if you and your partner haven't been getting it on and haven't been having fun in a while, try something different. And the different that you might want to try is, sure, you can go out and buy sex toys. That's great. I'm a big fan. And sure, you can have a lot of fun. And there's all sorts of kinky stuff that you can do. Absolutely. Sure, you can have a sex date. Absolutely. But the first thing I think you ought to do is just write down on a piece of paper, with a column on one side, everything I'd love to do, and the other side, everything I cannot stand doing anymore. And have your partner do the same thing, and just switch and go into different rooms so that you don't guffaw in front of each other. Just, you know, have some time. And then come back and talk about, what have we got that's the same? What have we got that's interesting? And the most important thing is, come back and have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. And that conversation can be so rich and so rewarding. And you can find out some really incredible things about, oh, I thought you loved it when I tugged on your nipples. No, they're killing me. Oh, it's your ear. Got it. Didn't realize. Oh, it's the back of your shin. Didn't realize that. That kind of thing. So really, you could learn so much. If you have a long-term partner, try it out and see what happens.
Yeah. And you have to make it safe. I mean, they may be they may say things that you might kind of shrug your shoulders at a little bit, but.
Totally. And we have this phrase, don't yuck my yum. So if they say something that's not so yummy to you, just say, maybe the next one.
Right. Cause you don't have to agree to everything.
Right, right, right. And who knows where it might lead? Do it again next week and see what happens.
Yeah. And I think there's the like you said, think outside the box, you know, like maybe it's a back rub. Maybe it's a shower, you know, maybe it's just that time together. Anyway.
True. Or maybe it's like having a great time cooking together, putting the stew on the stove,
putting
it on simmer, and then see what happens. Maybe you make your way upstairs. You know, we're a little old for doing it on the kitchen table anymore. It's just, it hurts the hip.
It's a balance thing.
Right. But we don't want to break, we don't want anybody to break any boats. But, you know, maybe you might want to just, while it's simmering and the whole house smells great, see what happens. So, or maybe just stay there and really take in that amazing aroma. But you're right, Wendy, really just try to change it up and get rid of this idea that orgasm has to occur with every sexual experience. It really doesn't. And for some people, an orgasm, they haven't had the same orgasm for years. And so that's okay. It's totally okay. It's really the journey.
I appreciate you saying that, because I think that does add a lot of pressure to relationships, especially as we're getting older, you know. And, you know, I mean, people want to continue to have sexual and intimate relationships into their 80s and 90s. Like, we would never have thought of that before, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, John Delamater, who's one of our favorite sex researchers, just passed away a few years ago, did this big analysis to try to figure out what it meant for older adults to still be having sex. And were older adults still having sex? So first of all, he and his colleagues found out, you'll be all happy to know, that people in the research literature, this in the academic literature, were having sex well into their 60s and 70s and 80s. Anecdotally, people come up to me all the time and say, like recently this woman came, well, this is before COVID, this woman came up to me and she said, see that woman over there? That's Mabel. She's 92 and she's got 4 boyfriends. And I was like, go Mabel, you are my hero today. So we know that people are still having sex, and we know that there are 3 reasons why people continue to have sex later in life. You want to hear what they are? It's so interesting. These are the issues that allow us to continue to have sexual activity in our lives in our 60s, 70s, and 80s. And it's not like what I had thought, you know, as a researcher, it's often the case that we make assumptions and they're so wrong. I thought it was like medication and chronic pain and hormonal changes. But the 3 key reasons that people can continue to have sex, one is having good physical and mental health. So keep getting out there and keep going to your Pilates classes and keep seeing your therapist and keep your mental and physical health strong. Second is having positive attitudes towards sex. So when I talk about being sex positive, it means literally being open to what might change and what might come as an older adult. And the third is kind of obvious, having access to a healthy partner. Now, I talk also about solo sex. Betty Dodson wrote a great book in the 60s called Liberating Masturbation. She just passed away recently. But, you know, solo sex or masturbation should not be forgotten. First of all, it's the greatest form of safe sex that you can have during COVID. Nobody's going to get infected if you're having a good time with yourself. But also, it's a great way to get to know your body as your body changes, because your body's, as I said, your body's erogenous zones or sexual scripts will change. But isn't it interesting that those are the 3 key areas that Delamater and his colleagues found for continued sexual activity?
Yes, and I think those are also the areas that would continue to thrive with a healthy sexual relationship and outlook, right?
Oh, good point, right? Because sex is actually good for your health. Beverly Whipple and her colleagues about 15 years ago published a great article about the benefits, the tremendous benefits of regular sexual activity, including a reduction of the risk of cardiovascular disease and the complications of it, risk of prostate and breast cancer, effects on your quality of life and your mental health. And one of the most important things that she and her colleagues found was that sexual stimulation can alleviate chronic pain.
And I believe that.
Yeah. And stimulation resulting in orgasm actually resulted in the greatest increase in pain relief. Now, Wendy, often somebody will say, oh, my partner doesn't want to have sex because they have a headache. And so now can I say to my partner, well, Dr. Fleischman said that you have a headache. Don't do that to me. Please don't do that.
It's better than Tylenol.
Don't use my name that way. But it could be true because when you're having sexual stimulation and sexual stimulation that results in an orgasm, a couple of things happen. A release of endorphins, which we know is that lovely, pleasurable feeling after we have any kind of exercise, and a release in oxytocin, one of my favorite neurotransmitters or hormones. It's that cuddle hormone. It's that lovely, blissful hormone. And that can actually ease some of the discomforts of these chronic pain disorders. But mostly, you're absolutely right. It can add to the relationship satisfaction, which is what I found in my own study, and it can add to overall improved quality of life.
Yeah. So Jane, you wrote a book, and I want to show it. You wrote a
book. I sure did. I'm so proud of it.
I bet you are. So let me show it up here on the screen. Let's see. Here we go. So it's called The Stonewall Generation, LGBTQ Elders on Sex, Activism, and Aging. So I'm curious what inspired you to write about this.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. I love the photos you chose. So that's four people from my book, and there's six others that people could meet when they read the book. And please, if you're interested in this book, we have a Facebook page about it. And if you wanted to continue this conversation, just look up the Stonewall Generation and find us on Facebook. But Wendy, the reason I got inspired to write the book was because I had just finished my dissertation on same-sex older adults. And I did a quantitative analysis and I got some very interesting results about, as I said, their sexual satisfaction, relationships, their resilience. I really learned a lot. But I was missing the stories. I was really longing for the stories behind the numbers. And so I began this four-year process of interviewing people. I crisscrossed the country. I had such a blast interviewing people and talking to them about their lives. And because I'm a sex researcher, I didn't shy away from their sexual lives because I was really interested in that, as well as what it was like for them as older LGBTQ folks. I'm a member of that community. I'm an older lesbian, and I wondered about what I would find and how I could kind of really learn more about this, what I call Stonewall Generation. These are boomers. The people in my book are anywhere from 60 to that woman on the bottom left in the blue t-shirt, Jackie Merkin. She just turned 90 this year. So she's the eldest. And the guy on the right, Joey Wasserman, he's not an elder, but he's a cool guy who works with SAGE. And SAGE is an elders organization. And it's an activist organization. And that's the other thing, Wendy. I'm an activist. And I was interested in people's stories about the Stonewall Rebellion and what happened that night on June 28th, 1969, in the West Village in New York City. But I was also really interested in kind of what their lives were like and what Stonewall meant to them. And most of these people were not at Stonewall that night. But Stonewall had left an indelible mark on their lives, and they became activists. And each one of the people in my book who ended up in the book were all people who have had lifelong journeys working in many different political organizations and causes. So I was stunned when I finished the book and realized that these are the people I chose, and they've become, you know, like family now. It's incredible. Like they're all over the country, and there's tremendous love there that I have for each of them, and that they let me into their lives and told me so much of their struggles and their pleasures as older adults.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating book. And Jane suggests you can get it on Amazon, but you could also get it from a local bookstore, and supporting your local booksellers is always a nice thing to do.
Yeah, if you can. I know sometimes you have to get it from Amazon. So if you have to, go ahead, but support those bookstores. They're really hurting.
And didn't you tell me that the book is also up for some kind of an award?
Yeah, I hope so. The American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, my book got nominated to them for an award this year, so I really hope it happens. It'd be so great.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. We have a comment here that I think is super important, that this listener was a little bit concerned about listening to our podcast, didn't know what to expect. And she says, it's eye-opening to validate the different feelings as people get older, normally such a taboo topic. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And one of the questions that I wanted to talk about was your podcast, OurBetterHalf.net. Yeah. So tell me about that. When you started it, how you pick your topics, do you have guests, all of that?
Yeah. It's a 20-minute podcast. It used to be because we commuted. Nobody's commuting anymore, but it's still a 20-minute podcast. Yours is much longer. I'm very impressed. We have, we go live never. We record.
We go live never.
so, you know, we often tell our guests, don't worry if you flub something, we'll just, you know, piece it out. But I realize that you take a much bigger risk with your podcast. You just
never tell my guests we go live always.
so we drop a podcast every two Sundays, so twice a month. And you can subscribe the way you subscribe to any podcast or go on our website. And I see you have it up there. Thanks, Wendy. And we have great guests from people who are working with older adults in geriatric care, people who are working in the issue of consent in older adults because of cognitive impairments. Very interesting topic. We have we just had a very interesting guest on who does trans affirmative surgery for younger and older adults. You know, many people think that being transgender is just a young people's issue, but certainly we know that is also a myth. And then we have lots of really great sex therapists and sex educators on, people from our field. My co-host is Dr. Rosera Teresi, who's a fantastic sex therapist on Long Island, whom I really love working with. She's such a blast. And she's a lot younger than me, so it's really fun. So she knows different people than I do. And we just try to bring on as many guests from such a wide variety as we can. And most recently, we have found that our listeners really get attached to our interviews, and they send them around to their friends, and that's how we build our audience. And so it's been really great. Yeah. I was even a guest on my own show this year. It was very interesting.
You were.
It was much harder, actually, to be a guest than be the interviewer.
It is nice to be the interviewer. I know.
Yeah.
Well, I listened to the show a few times to try and get ready for this interview. And, you know, it's very comforting, I guess, is the word, to hear the way you all just talk about all these different topics. Because, like you said, you know, for some reason, it becomes a challenge to talk about sex. And I think as you know, if we're getting back to as our bodies change, you know, some of us, things move around, right? And so you don't feel as sexy anymore. And, right. you know, and so much of sex is mental, right? Totally. So how you feel and the,
right.
the blocks you. So as a sex educator, you're not a sex therapist. What is the difference there?
Sure. I wanted to be a sex educator because I like working in groups, and sex therapists work with individuals or with couples. And I decided that I really, you know, I've been an educator most of my life. And so I really thought that just changing the content a little bit wouldn't be that hard. And it really turned out not to be that hard. And what I say to older adults who talk to me about, for instance, this whole issue of body image, right? I mean, it's a huge issue. One of my professors, Pat Koch, wrote an article about 10 years ago called Feeling Frumpy. And what is the correlation between body image and sexual satisfaction? And one of the things that they found was that it's really exactly what you said, Wendy. It's all in your head. And so when older adults say to me, I'm really scared to take my clothes off with this new person. Like we're about, you know, we're just about to get into bed and I don't know if I can go on that date with them. So here's my advice. Okay. Ready? Okay,
ready.
Number one, get rid of overhead lights. Just don't ever turn them on.
Okay.
Light a candle. Candlelight is way more beautiful, forgiving, loving, calm. Secondly, get undressed and put whatever it is on that you like that's feeling a little sexy on you and get into bed first and then invite them in, because that allows you to kind of remove that walking toward the bed fear of am I jiggling, am I bouncing, is my gravity showing, you know, what is going on? And so enjoying that, and then once the two of you are there, if you're about a quarter of an inch apart, they're not going to see your rolls and your flabs. They're going to see inside of your soul. They're going to look inside of you deeply. And just remember to have all of your stuff ready for you at the bedside. So I was a Girl Scout once. My mom was a leader. I was very proud of that. And I like to be prepared. So how do you be prepared when you're an older adult and you want to have sex with somebody who you haven't had sex with either in a long time or ever? Make sure you have your lube. Lots of great lubes on the market, particularly for older adults. I like Uber Lube. It's just a great name, great packaging. And they have vitamin E in their lube. Isn't that great? They really are marketing it toward older adults. If you need to have a condom or a dental dam, make sure you have that. If you wanted to try a sex toy, make sure you have that and make sure that it's charged up. tissues. Make sure if you like music, you have your iPhone there with your Spotify account and your little, you know, speaker. You know what I'm saying? Like, make sure you're prepared.
That makes so much sense. If there's any questions from the audience, now's the time. But I think we have covered a lot, Jane.
So yeah, we've broken some good ground here for Hey Boomer, I think. Yeah.
I know, right? Yeah. So everybody is now ready and prepared and thinking about this. all right.
And
so
wait, Wendy, I got one more thing I want to say. If you are working with a boomer, if you're working with an older adult, say you're a social worker, clinician, rehab therapist, administrator, and you see two older adults walking around holding hands or getting affectionate, please, please, please don't say to them, oh, that's so cute. Because older adults have the same feelings as younger adults do when we're falling in love, when we're falling into an attraction, when we're getting excited. And that's vulnerability. And I really would want to remind people who are listening, who are working with people in their 80s and 90s, that they can also have the same feelings of vulnerability that we might have in our 50s, 60s, and 70s. So just wanted to remind us about that.
A great reminder. And I want to remind everybody to please listen to your TED Talk, because, you know, the whole idea of allowing and respecting love and sexual intimacy and any kind of intimacy in seniors, I think is really an important one. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks. That was hard. That was hard work.
The TED Talk?
Yeah, memorizing. You know how hard that is at this age? It's crazy hard.
That was hard. God.
But it was great. It was great to do it. I'm so happy that I was able to get it out there because over 8,000 people have seen it so far. I'm very, very pleased about that.
Yeah, it was a very good talk, I thought.
Thank you.
All right, so don't forget to check on your preventative screenings if you're interested in that. And I want to tell you about our guest for next week. I'm excited about this. Her name is Angie Stiegel. And Angie is she calls herself a wayfinder. And a wayfinder means that the work she does with people, usually business owners and other professionals, to find out about who you are, what do you really want, and how will you get from where you are to where you want to be. And one of the experiences she takes her clients through is something called forest bathing. Right? And based on our talk today, I know that everybody's going to be like, oh my gosh, we're going out naked in the forest. No, that's not what it is. What it is about taking time in nature and slowing down and really thinking about how you're being present and what you're experiencing and what it means to you. Yeah, so it sounds really nice. I'm looking forward to that. And I forgot to ask you, Jane, if there's a couple of takeaways that you want to leave with our audience today.
Yes. The answer to the question, is it okay for grandma or grandpa to have sex? The answer is yes. Enjoy. Don't be too destination focused and enjoy the journey. That's enough.
Thank you. So I like to end all of these interviews with a quote from C.S. Lewis, where he said, "You are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream." Great. So thank you all for joining me today. And let's keep meeting weekly to set goals, to dream dreams, to build our community. I am grateful for all of you. Thank you so much, Jane.
Thank you, Wendy. What a treat. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. My name is Wendy Green, and this has been Hey Boomer.
Are you at risk for stroke or cardiovascular disease? Get screened with Lifeline Screening for peace of mind or early detection. Screenings are painless, easy, and non-invasive. Over 700,000 people per year get screened at Lifeline Screening. Click in the show notes for a special offer for Hey Boomer listeners.